Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming, or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing. Come, writers and critics, prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are a-changing. Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall, for he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. There's a battle outside and it's raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls, for the times they are a-changing. Come, mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand, for the times they are a-changing. The line is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the times they are a-changing. Hello, everyone. This is the New American Radio Show. And we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, and they do deserve your support. Remember to head on over to freedomslips.com. Show them some love. They put on two streams of radio just about 24/7. They work very hard to bring you news, entertainment, opinion. It's a very good network. We are proud to be on there. And now, normally at this time, I would be introducing my co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer. But that's not going to happen anymore, because Mike has left the building. Mike has quit the show. There was a very big court case. It's been in all the news. Mike Palachek and Jim Fetzer were both lost in court in a lawsuit that was brought by Larry Posner. And I'm going to read something that I posted today or yesterday, I'm not sure, on Facebook about that situation. So bear with me just a second while I make it big enough so I can actually read it. Okay, here we go. Sorry to be so unprepared here, folks. I'm used to Mike doing a lot of stuff. I have enlisted our weekly guest, Philip Ferrugio, to join me as a co-host, but this particular part is all me, and so I need to make this happen. Just give me a second here. Mike Palachek and Jim Fetzer have lost in the lawsuit brought by Leonard Posner in relation to their book about the Sandy Hook school shootings. Mike has been my co-host on the New American Dream Radio Show since February 3, 2011, and Jim has been a monthly guest. Mike is stepping down as a result of the court decision. Now, I did not always agree with Fetzer and Palachek on their interpretation of events. But I very much believe they have the right to their beliefs and the right to share them. I feel that lawsuits like this one are an attack on freedom of speech and freedom of the press, civil rights that are increasingly imperiled in today's America. I'm not surprised, but I am disappointed in the court decision, because Mike Palachek in particular is a highly valued friend as well as a great author. I will miss him. Philip, I know that you're on the phone, so let me bring you into this. Philip Ferruggio is from Port Orange, Florida. I have been producing a radio show for him called It's the Empire Stupid, and he's been contributing weekly columns to our show. So we're going to be pulling some of his content from It's the Empire Stupid, and we're going to benefit from Philip's wit and his sound analysis of what's going on. Welcome to the show now as my co-host, Philip
Ferruggio. Thank you, Chuck. Thank you. Thank you. So, tell me exactly the lawsuit that they lost. What was alleged or what was proven that they actually said in there? It was a book that they wrote? They wrote a book. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed, Phil. They wrote a book which was called Nobody Died at Sandy Hook.
Okay.
And originally, I was going to publish it in my publishing company, CWG Press. But I didn't like it. I didn't feel that they had completely proved their case. But and despite my belief that they had every right to say it, what they were saying, I didn't really want to be part of it. As a result, they with another person started up a company called Moonrock Books, and they published this and several other books about other, well, conspiracy type events.
Conspiracy theory. Yeah. Okay. May I say something here?
Please do.
Yeah, if they would have written a book, and if it would have been, if the title would have said, "Did anyone get killed at Sandy Hook?" But they came out with a affirmative title saying that nobody was killed at Sandy Hook. And when you do that, you open yourself up for what happened. Yeah, and they got sued. I had interviewed Jim for the show that I have with you about a year or so ago, and we were talking about 9/11, and he made the statement that there were no planes, that there were holograms of planes, and it was all a hoax, and that nobody was on any of these planes that crashed, because the planes didn't crash. And when I asked him, in the interview, I said, well, what about all the passengers that were supposed to be on these planes, on the manifests? And what about their families? And he said, well, everyone can be gotten to. And, you know, I just said, I just can't understand how you could make that assertion. Not only the people on the planes that didn't exist, but what about the families that lost these people? So it kind of got me, thinking about where Jim was coming from. And he also mentioned about Sandy Hook in the interview. And I was very disappointed in what he was saying. So that's what I can say about that.
Yes. Well, I remember that. And I believe that you chose not to actually publish that interview, whereas I think every other interview, and there have been something like 48, has been published. So it was you had you made a very clear statement in that way. Let me throw out some of the other things that people have been saying to me in response to my post on Facebook. Jonathan Edison said, "This was not a free speech case. They lost a case on summary judgment for defamation and consequent damages. Defamation means knowingly false statements meant to cause harm." To which I replied, "When someone is convinced that what they're saying is true, yet a court decides they've propagated knowingly false statements, does it not become a free speech issue?" And well, I'll tell you, I didn't find very many people that agreed with me that it was indeed a free speech issue, but I'm still not convinced that it isn't a free speech issue. The question seems to be that their statements caused harm. The guy that sued them, his son was one of those killed at Sandy Hook, and yet Jim and Mike were convinced that the death certificate was faked. The guy showed up at other school shooting incidents, that the whole thing was staged, that it was a part of an agenda on the part of the government for gun control and for removing the right to own guns. This, frankly, feels far-fetched.
Okay, what feels far-fetched?
The Jim and Mike statements I believe in a good conspiracy as much as the next person. I am absolutely convinced that there are some very real, bad people doing some things behind the scenes that we don't get to know about. But there's a point where I start having trouble believing in the conspiracy theory. Just as and I also reached that point on the holograms for 9/11. The idea that the Sandy Hook school was closed already, that the entire incident was staged and nobody died, and they put up fake death certificates. This is all. It's hard for me to swallow.
Well, yeah, but
I'm still not convinced they don't have the right to say it.
Well, yeah, but you see, that's like yelling fire in a movie theater. I mean, the person yelling fire could turn around later when he's arrested, let's say, and he could say, I really thought there was a fire, and maybe he really did feel there was a fire, that person, but he was wrong. I mean, there wasn't a fire, and he jeopardized so many people. Let's say somebody got trampled running out of the movie theater and died because he yelled fire in a movie theater. And it's the same thing with the Sandy Hook. But what I don't understand, Chuck, honestly, what I don't understand, and it's the same with the 9/11 thing that Jim Fetzer had said to me. What happened to all these kids that didn't die? What, did they take them in a plane and fly them to another, island or something? That's what gets me, I just think it was inappropriate about the theory that these guys had.
I'm pretty sure their theory is wrong, but I'm not completely convinced that it's inappropriate. Because they found what they believe is evidence, and what certainly, if you read their books and their articles about this, it's almost believable evidence. Where did they come up with this stuff? I don't know. But they didn't fake it. They found this in record. And so I don't know. I mean, if I were this Posner guy, I would be incensed. I would hate these people. I would call them the worst scum of the earth. But is that really appropriate? Because they felt they were telling the truth. They were revealing truth that had been hidden. It seems to me it's delusional rather than defamation.
Well, it could be delusional to you and me, but to the parents of the kids that were dead, or for the people that were in the planes who were dead, you know, it that's not delusional thinking. They look at these people who make these statements as being dangerous people. Look, what I told people after I interviewed Jim, and, you know, Jim, he seemed like a very nice man. You know, I never met him, but times I did speak to him, he seems like a very, very polite, intelligent man. But what I told a lot of people who believe like I do in a lot of the other conspiracy theory, I believe there was a conspiracy with 9/11, you know, that it was definitely not what the 9/11 commission or the mainstream media had said. And I agree with Fetzer and Mike on Robert Kennedy, as well as his brother and even Martin King. I've studied those three assassinations, and I believe that Oswald had nothing to do with John Kennedy. Sirhan did not shoot Robert Kennedy, and James Earl Ray did not shoot Martin Luther King. So I believe in those conspiracies, but I think what folks like Jim, and now you're telling me Mike was involved with him, they are giving fuel to the disinformation people on the other side of the fence. In other words, they're doing a favor to the people that have been giving out real disinformation for years on all the other conspiracies, because it makes that's when they start calling everyone a conspiracy nut. I'm sure you've heard that a lot, right, Chuck? They label
I've been
people
called that before.
Nut.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. You and I both. And yep. And because of what Jim and Mike had done in these two instances with the 9/11 and now with the Sandy Hook, unfortunately, it lumps all conspiracy people, thinkers, in the same basket, and that's what the empire wants.
Yes, I think you have hit the nail on the head there, Phil. It discredits the genuine, the genuine problems with many events. I'm convinced there are false flag events going on, but this approach has not done anything to lend credence to those who are looking for problems. Instead, it has discredited them.
Well, you look at look at Alex Jones. Now, if you study Alex Jones, his history, Alex Jones came up or got popular, he was really speaking what the John Birch Society people have been saying for decades, all right, the John Birch Society people, where they're ultra, ultra, ultra right, to put it right, really far to the right, and you go right into the whole thing of the Jewish conspiracy, the Jewish conspiracy to take over the world, and things of that nature. And that's what Alex Jones made himself famous by parroting these John Birch Society things. Now, believe me, I've spoken to many John Birch Society people on the ultra right, and I agree with them on a lot of issues. Okay, but I take issue when they start talking about that the Jews are behind everything, and the communist thing. In other words, they go too far. That's the problem. I mean, they go too far, and it ruins it. It ruins it for the real, sincere conspiracy theorists.
Yes, I think you're quite right there, Bill. And I am going to miss Mike as my co-host, but I think that you and I will do some things where we really get into some issues a little more deeply instead of just parroting the conspiracy theories. And so, we're not going to suppress them, but we're going to challenge them. And I think that's a very important change for this show, and I welcome you. I appreciate your volunteering to help me out with it. And it's now time for the station break. So remember, Revolution Radio is a listener-supported network. Radio, head on over to freedomslips.com.
We'll be right back
and show us some support.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm on to something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit partdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we had a nice chance to visit with Philip Ferrugio live, and now we're going to play his pre-recorded column before we knew all this stuff about Mike. This is his pre-recorded column, It's the Empire, Stupid.
Okay, good evening, Working Stiffs. Serving the Empire and not the people. You know, Eric Holder, former Attorney General under President Obama, was being interviewed by that bulldog of a reporter, tongue-in-cheek, Chris Cuomo, on a CNN show where he earns the blue-collar salary of at least $4 million a year. Holder was commenting on this new field of Democratic presidential hopefuls and, of course, the fact that he, Holder, had been contemplating a run himself. Holder has a track record, not unlike many others who left government service to earn big bucks in the private sector, that is shady at best. After he left the Clinton Justice Department around the turn of the century, Holder was gobbled up by the law firm of Covington and Burling, who happened to represent, defend is a better word, the Wall Street predatory firms. Holder did his job so well that when Obama assumed power, he was recruited to be Attorney General. Now, here is a quote from investigative journalist Matt Taibbi in 2015 on the Democracy Now! Show. Matt Taibbi said, yeah, I mean, I think this is probably the biggest single example of the revolving door that we've ever had. And we've had some whoppers in our past. I think previously the worst one was probably Louisiana Congressman Billy Tarzan, leaving Congress and taking a $2 million a year job with pharma right after he helped pass the prescription drug benefit bill. But what Holder just did just blows Towson away. I mean, he spent 6 years essentially guiding all of those Wall Street firms, which many of them are clients of his company that he's now working for. He guided them all back to profitability. He allowed bankers to escape prosecution. And now he's going right back to that firm where he's going to enjoy a very lucrative partnership, whether he ever works again, you know, for the rest of his life, unquote. All right, now let's not single out Mr. Holder, please. He's just a raindrop in the ocean of Empire servants. What about those so-called news talk shows that many working stiffs rely on for their up-to-date info? Well, right-wing bulldog Sean Hannity of Fox earns $36 million a year to represent all those Make America Great Again viewers who frequent his show. In the so-called middle of the political news talk, CNN, nice guy Anderson Cooper earns $12 million a year. On the so-called left MSNBC network, Rachel Maddow earns $7 million and Joe Scarborough $6 million. Now, these four titans of political understanding earn mega millions more through their book deals and speaking engagements. And why not? This is America, where the more you suck up to the uber rich, you too can become uber rich. One has to admire tough-talking politicians like Vice President Mike Pence, always banging the drum for military assaults on sovereign nations. White-haired Mike, how long has he had that beautiful coiffure of snow? Was 30 or 31 years of age in 1991 when Bush Sr. rang the alarm to stop the butcher of Baghdad. Why didn't flag-waving Mike Pence join up to fight the good fight? How about men like Paul Ryan, who could have done the same in 2002 when we were ready to stop that butcher of Baghdad again? Then we come to this latest yuppie presidential hopeful, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who just had his town hall meeting recently. Mayor Pete was asked by a member of the audience about his thoughts concerning the so-called, which was illegal and immoral, Iraq War. Pete so eloquently mentioned that he was in college then and protested against our going into Iraq. He said he still feels the same way. Then his biography states that he served as a naval intelligence ensign in Bagram, Afghanistan, for all of 6 months in 2014 after having joined the Naval Reserve in 2009. Oh, and earlier in the broadcast, he did acknowledge that since his youth, he always had this desire or dream to be president. Well, what better way to pad one's resume than to show military service? Come on. Anyone who saw through the lies and illegal and unconscionable, immoral acts of invading and occupying Afghanistan and Iraq would never then join up. Terry Reid, a former CIA spook, wrote a book in 1994, Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA, about his experiences with the drugs for arms enterprise that centered around MENA, Arkansas in the late 1980s. He relates in his book how he sat in at a covert meeting between then-Governor Clinton and none other than Oliver North, whereupon the governor was promised that his career would take off if he kept allowing the enterprise to continue shipping cocaine into Arkansas and sending arms of the Contras back. Is this hearsay or is it truth? You investigate and make your own decisions. Just remember that a few short years later, nationally unknown Governor William Jefferson Clinton became the deep state's next front man. Much like his successor, Bush Jr., who had his daddy pull strings to get him into the Air National Guard and out of ever serving in the shit, a.k.a. Vietnam. Sadly, the rot just continues to saturate our republic. What do all of the aforementioned people have in common? Well, folks, it has always been and always will be about the money. Why do so many of our fellow Americans sit back and love this great country of ours and then allow the uber-rich to rule us? This is not the trumpeting for what many want in a revolution, not at all. The majority of us, even those with college and graduate degrees, are so dumbed down when it comes to our real history as an empire. The dissent must come in the form of, first, educating millions upon millions of working stiffs about why things are the way they are now. Not an easy task, indeed. Yet, for those out there who reject the boob tube crap and seek information elsewhere, that is a great first step. Thank you.
And thank you, Phil. That was an insightful column. We're going to jump right ahead to our next guest, Frank Cordero, who runs the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Frank was recently on a trip to Los Angeles, and he's back home in Des Moines, and I spoke with him not too long ago, and here is that conversation.
All right, you got it? Hello?
I'm finally ready to record, Frank.
All right.
Okay. So tell me what happened since you got home from L.A.
Well, it was just a great trip. I got to spend some quality time with Jeff Dietrich and his community and Tony Flynn, a dear friend, associated with the Catholic Worker, somewhere in the middle of the state. I got to visit a Catholic Worker in Guadalupe, California. That's in a town like an Iowa town. I know they don't exist or don't think they do, but just a few thousand people and nothing but rural areas around it. Interesting place. So, but mostly it's the sharing with the Klan. And I also took the time to write my next article for the Via Pacis. That's called The Way of Peace. It's the Des Moines paper, Catholic Worker paper. And I'd like to share it with you all because it was a time for me just to do some reflecting. And the title is called 50 Years Ago, About My Dad, Me, In the Sober Eye. Let me explain. A couple of months ago, my brother Joe discovered a number of boxes of my mother's stuff under their basement staircase in a closet. All of us were welcome to look through the stuff and claim what we wanted. Among the items I got was a May 14, 1969 issue of the Aquin, the student paper for Dowling High School. Dowling was the all-boys Catholic high school my father taught and coached at, and where all my brothers and I graduated from. I have four brothers. The spring of 1969 was my senior year. The front page headline read, "Cordero Death Stuns Dowling. Rites attended by thousands." With a large photo of my dad at his classroom desk. There were testimonies about my father throughout the issue. All of them true. My father was an amazing human being. Reading this issue of the Aquin brought me back a lot of deep memories and heartfelt emotions. Memories and emotions that were foundational for the person I have become. A lifelong Catholic worker and resistor to the U.S. Empire. Though at first glance, it's hard to see any connection between the me in 1969 and the me today. In 1969, I was on an entirely different life path than the one I ended up embracing. Below here, what I'm going to read came from a bio I sent to the Dowling Athletic Hall of Fame Selection Committee before becoming inducted in their Athletic Hall of Fame in September of 2016. And it says, Frank Cordero, Dowling High School, class of 69, sports played and lettered, football, wrestling, track, and baseball. On the first two undefeated Dowling High School football teams, 67-68, beginning the longest undefeated string of wins in school history. Captain of the football team, a quote from the head coach, "You're our captain. You are the coach on the field. I know you're going to do a great job. I hope you and the squad are as enthused about the season as the coaches are," end of quote. Head coach Jim Williams, a personal note to me and a letter that he gave to all of the football players before the season started. I was named first team all-city football and fourth team all-state football. I was elected in class offices all 4 years at the student council holding both vice president and president offices. Served on the citywide student council too. I also mentioned, and here's where it gets interesting, I received the Aquinas key, the highest honor a senior can receive. It was always based on academic excellence for the top students in our class. I got the award that year not for my grades, which were mediocre at best, just enough to get me into college on a football scholarship. I got the award for my work with the student council, a totally new category and totally bogus. The backstory of this Aquinas Key Award all came back to me on page 5 of the Aquin in the opinion page. The 5 smartest guys in my class were denied their rightfully earned Aquinas Keys that year because they published an alternative newspaper called The Sober Eye. In it, they wrote anti-Vietnam War articles and advocated that Dowling High School should remain where it was located in a poor neighborhood on the near north side of Des Moines as a sign of solidarity with one of the poorest and most racially charged neighborhoods in the city, instead of moving to the wealthy west side where it now resides. When news of their underground newspaper went viral, in those days, that meant the local conservative WHO radio guy, Russ Levine, got hold of the story and rang the radio alarm of commies at Dowling High School. And all hell broke loose on our all-male campus. To my great regret,
I was one of the leading voices distancing the good name of Dowling from these very unpatriotic classmates. And I tried to run them off the campus, literally. The first demo I ever organized and led was a pro-USA, pro-Dowling High rally on campus. Oh, my God. As I remember it, we really did not physically kick these guys off the campuses. However, at graduation, they did not receive their Aquinas keys, and I got a surprise Aquinas key for the student council. On the opinion page, the smart guys on our side wrote columns tearing down the sober eye editors. A petition signed by over half of the senior class, my name included, disassociating ourselves from Sober Eye 5 and reaffirming our faith-filled allegiance to American values and Catholic education. Ironies abound. It is not lost on me that the Catholic worker community I founded in 1976 is in the same neighborhood as the old Dowling. We serve the very people I was afraid of in the 60s. Plus, I would have been voted the least likely guy in my class to turn into a lifelong, long-haired, ponytail, hippie, jailbird peace activist. Add to this, I'm part of a Catholic worker community that has publicly advocated for women priests in the Catholic Church in open defiance of our local bishop. That's a lot of irony for a Southside Italian kid who's a baby boomer. The common thread throughout all these 50 years for me is the witness and influence my father's short life had on me. My father lived a life of service as a teacher and a coach. He was a true believer in his God, family, church, and country. A Purple Heart World War II vet, my dad came back from war to become a teacher and a coach to serve and give back to his community. Teaching at Dowling was a dream come true. Coaching baseball and winning became a means to an end for my dad to serve his God, his family, church, country wholeheartedly. And he taught us all to do the same. Looking back now at the 1950s and 60s, I was raised in a very racist, sexist, homophobic world for sure. My world may well have been full of these isms. And yet, growing up, I was mostly unaware of these larger world issues. I gave my day-to-day allegiance to the same mission and purpose that my father lived every day of his life at home, in our neighborhood, and its large extended Italian families and friends, and the Dowling High School community and the larger city of Des Moines, especially in the world of sports. Father Kelly, one of my dad's best friends, began dad's eulogy with, "When the one great scorer comes to write your name, he asks you not whether you won or lost, but how you played the game."
Sorry to cut off Frank Cordero there, but we only have 5 or 6 minutes left, and I really want to give a chance to Anthony Rayson, and so I'm going to call him right about now. Anthony publishes zines in the Chicago area. And he's been a regular guest on our show for a long time. He's a prison activist who helps prisoners' voices be heard and helps get the outside Hello. Voices in for the prisoners. Anthony, welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. And you're on the air.
Very good. Thanks a lot. I just got a new piece written by a brilliant prisoner named Hibachi Lamar. He's sort of a protege of mine. When he got out a few years ago, he came out to Chicago to work with us, and he got involved in Chicago politics and writing, and he's a brilliant writer. Anyway, I'm going to read from his piece. I'm just now formatting it into a zine. The title is The Ghetto Bred Anarchist. Okay, he starts out with a couple of quotes. We must delve into the depths where neither liberals nor conservatives dare to tread, into the murky waters of despair and dread that now flood the streets of Black America. That's Cornel West. Let's get down to business. Mental self-defensive fitness, Chuck D. Okay, here he goes. Mumia Mujamal, a Black Panther and political prisoner in Pennsylvania, which is where he's, where Habachi's in a halfway house right now, was released into the prison population in 2013 after serving 30 years on death row. When I met Mumia in the prison library, I was immediately motivated by his calmness and remarkable sense of clarity. When I was in solitary confinement in the early 2000s, I had a cell neighbor, Joe Blow, who was mentally reduced to smearing his feces on his cell wall after 3 months in the hall. Now, how could one person who's done 3 decades in solitary come out mentally healthier than the one who went crazy after 3 months in the hall? By exercising a revolutionary mentality. Throughout his decades of isolation, Mumia managed to write numerous articles on the struggle, rebelliously wrote books, and even managed to make a CD and appear on the radio. Revolutionary mentality can bring order out of chaos in your life just as well, whether you find yourself in civilization or on a cell block. Self-respect. Before we can ever expect to be respected by other human beings, we must first uphold our own humanity and begin respecting ourselves. Self-respect liberates you from the chains of a slave-like mentality and marks the beginning of a truly revolutionary mind frame in life. This doesn't imply a need to wearing camouflage and black beret hats in your day-to-day activities. You can be just as militant-minded without such ostentatious displays of the sort. You could be a sanitation worker or a prisoner in an orange jumpsuit and still carry within you this essential level of self-respect. In life, there will be those who want to rob you of this possession, whether it be a corrections officer or a so-called superior at work. It could be an enemy who envies your newfound sense of dignity and privately wants to see you down on your luck instead of alive and up on your feet. Don't let them rob you of this possession. Self-respect is a fundamental need in the fight for self-determination for yourself and for your humanity as a whole. Don't let anyone take it away from you. It's one of the most important, one of the most coveted, and priceless things you could ever possess. Becoming a living representation of revolutionary ideals. A revolutionary mentality and the self-respect that it bestows to a human being can be acquired through studying and reflecting on how to make yourself a better person in life. Acknowledging your importance within the world as a paramount individual with something substantial to contribute to it is to the transformation process within you and in the world. In a society of so many lies and facades, self-respect is an invaluable virtue in becoming a living representation of revolutionary ideals. Truth-speaking, or maheru, as the ancient Egyptians called it, is revolutionary in itself, and like MLK said, truth crushed to the ground will rise again. Speak truth to power and watch coercive power diminish in strength before you. Reflect on your revolutionary mission in life. Encourage those who fall prey to such a predatory system, such as that of the government, to understand their importance and relevance in the struggle that we're at war in. Black men, women, and child, you're not inferior. Black men, women, and child, you're not inferior, and our people never were inferior. Throughout history, we've been a well of remarkable depth, which has and continues to quench the thirst of knowledge seekers from history's most eminent schools of thought. Ancient Greek philosophers of high repute, such as Plato and Pythagoras of Crotona, studied the mysteries of life, high mathematics, and advanced astronomy in our schools in ancient Egypt, Kemet. Plato, who was initiated in the pyramid at Giza at the age of 49, opened his famous philosophical school known as the Academy. Tradition has it that he was sold as a slave by the King of Sicily and was greatly persecuted for revealing such mysterious secrets of life to those who would hear it. Pythagoras, who taught that if the part of a miserable man to speak and to act without reflection, received much of his philosophical light from the Egyptian temple of Isis, and this is after several rebuffs and refusals. He later required of his disciples that they live in complete verbal silence and abstinence for 5 years upon admission into his school. Such was the intensity level of these remarkable teachings. Moreover, the Greek Hippocrates, the so-called father of medicine, and whom the Hippocratic Oath of those joining the medical profession swear by, was 1,900 years prior, preceded by the great physician Imhotep. He was the first recorded multi-genius, an African who studied medicine in ancient Kemet, Egypt, around 2630 BCE. The Greek historian Herodotus wrote of how the parents of Hercules were Egyptian. And those who study history today can discover that even Princess Europa, whom Europe was named after, was of African ancestry as well. This is the type of knowledge that our ancestors in time of chattel slavery couldn't greatly benefit from had it not been a crime for our people to learn how to read and write and speak in their native tongue. No wonder in 1832, Henry Barry spoke on the floor of the Virginia House of Representatives.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
We'll be right back. Light may enter the slave's mind. If we could extinguish the capacity to see the light, our work would be complete.
Then, hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career,
right,
or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show,
The
Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
I really appreciate it. Talk to you next time.
All right, see you everybody. Bye-bye.
Okay.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. For the quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Wexel Politics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It just was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, welcome back to the show, folks. Once again, this is Chuck Gregory and the New American Dream Radio Show. Our next guest of the evening is Larry Pinkney. Larry was an original Black Panther, and he's one of our monthly guests. I am very proud to have Larry on the show, and I'm going to try to call him right now. And hopefully we'll be adding him right into the call here. So here we go. And remember, an original Black Panther.
Good evening, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck Gregory and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Well, thank you very, very much. I am looking forward to it. I'll be extremely brief this evening. I apologize for that. But I want to first and foremost say that I'm always delighted to be on the New American Dream radio show, and I give my regards to everyone who listens to it. I extend my regards. In any event, my very brief topic tonight is something that I've touched on before, and it's called critical thinking. Again, critical thinking. Let me begin by saying that a component of critical thinking is being able to hold two opposite ideas in one's mind and actually being able to weigh them and to come to a conclusion, but without, shall I say, jumping to a conclusion, coming to a conclusion versus jumping to a conclusion. You have two things in your mind that may be opposite ideas. Critical thinking means that we have to research, we have to really use common sense, which, by the way, as my friends say, is not so common anymore. We have to use, as my father used to call it, horse sense or common sense. But critical thinking also means that we must think outside of the box. All right. What some people refer to, and I'm giving you an example or giving an example right now. Sometimes you've all heard the expression conspiracy theorists. Well, first of all, let me remind everyone that expression actually came from the Central Intelligence Agency back in the 1960s. And that in and of itself is most interesting. But what we need to be as critical thinkers, we need to be conspiracy analysts. Big difference. We need to analyze. We need to think things through from as many different perspectives as logically possible. We don't just accept official narratives. We question, and not merely question authority, we question period. We don't just accept the narrative, be it official or unofficial. And that's where critical thinking comes in. So I want to just say this. Let's be critical thinkers. It doesn't happen by osmosis. But once we begin to critically think, to explore, to analyze, to look at things from different perspectives and possibilities, then we are becoming critical thinkers. And it becomes easier and easier until finally we get to the point where we do it automatically. So let's be critical thinkers. Let's be conspiracy analysts. Let's analyze, let's think things through. And as we used to say back in the day, don't go for the okie dokie, don't go for the ghosts. Think it, think about it, think through it, and look at it from many different perspectives, then reach a conclusion. All right, I'm going to leave it at that. I apologize for my succinctness, but as always, love to you all, and all power to the people.
Larry, thank you so much. And succinct, yes, but, well, succinct. It, very, very accurate, and you definitely made your point, and I thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Please take care. Stay strong. Thank you very much, Chuck.
All right. Talk to you next month, Larry. Thanks for being here.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Okay. Bye-bye.
Enter Donald J. Trump, two-bit con man, television huckster, a denizen of gaudy casinos and smoke-filled back rooms, who conned himself into the biggest job of all. He is our guide to a new realm you won't find on any map. A world of his own creation, where words like truth and lie no longer have meaning. Where men's darkest instincts are given license, and where things like human decency and tolerance are relics of a bygone day. A bit of folk wisdom holds that people rise to the level of their incompetence. A case in point, Mr. Donald Trump, a man with one foot in his mouth and the other in the Twilight Zone. Our next guest of the evening, M.K. Davis, joins us each month with some very interesting, usually some very interesting news about looking for Bigfoot. And so we are going to add him to the call right about now. And while we're waiting for that to ring, let me remind you once again that we are streaming on Revolution Radio, and it is a listener-supported network, and they do deserve your support. All right, our phone is dialing right now, calling M.K. Davis, who will tell us about Bigfoot. And he should be here any time now.
Hello.
Well, hello, MK. It's Chuck Gregory and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Okay. Chuck, how are you doing? I'm very
I'm
pleased
good.
To be here tonight.
Thanks, MK. I really appreciate you being here with me.
Very pleased to be here tonight. I'm in the middle of a summer, kind of a sabbatical. I got my grandkids, and and enjoying life in a very subdued way right now, but I'm planning things. And of course, you know, the summertime is hot and steamy down here in the South, and we're undergoing a flood right now that's been going on since March. One of the most extended, you know, long protracted floods I've ever experienced, and I've seen all the floods down here. We had all this extreme flooding along the Arkansas River, along the Platte River, the Missouri River, and even the Ohio, and all of that found its way down here to us, and the rivers are all backed up. And here recently, on the lower end of this in a town that's just isolated, I don't know how these people even got in there unless they went down one of the, you know, the levees.
MK, would you remind us, please, where it is that you are?
Yeah, I'm in Mississippi. I'm in central Mississippi. And there's a little town called Holly Bluff. And I've been visiting this town. The only way in there is through a levee. You know, the levee tops. You can still get in there. And I've been interested in what it's doing to wildlife. And, you know, in the event that there could possibly be some Bigfoot in those areas, or Sasquatch, or even whatever the southern version of the Sasquatch is, these types of flooding are producing some unusual opportunities. They're causing the wildlife to concentrate in these higher areas, these high ground, they call it, which is few and far between. And you start to see some strange animals. I took a picture of a piebald deer. He's kind of half albino, half, regular color. And it's one in 30,000 deer are piebald. So you see that I would have never seen that deer if it weren't not for the unusual conditions. But this past weekend, I was going back out to that place again, Holly Bluff, which has only one way in, one way out. Most of the people are evacuated. And I got kind of sick going down the levee, and I turned around and came back. And then after I got back, I heard that there was a couple of people that ran into the floodwaters in their vehicle, and they found them floating in the water separate from their cars, which is kind of strange. No one has been able to explain how these people were separated from their vehicle. But it was a fatality, two fatalities in this area, and it really brought home to me this long protracted flooding, which it's not anything that's, you know, that comes upon you all of a sudden. This is a real strange thing to happen, because you can see that flood water. It's in on flat ground, the Mississippi Delta. You can see it a long ways off. So, you know, it's like they ran into the water at high speed. They like they were in a panic mode. What they were even doing back there, these people were not even from the area. They were from Vicksburg. They had left Vicksburg and were headed back to try to find a way to Rolling Fork. And they must have just something caused them to panic. They ran, they just plunged off into this flood water at high speed. So, that to me, it was very sobering. I'd been taking my grandkids with me out there, and I better not do that anymore, because, you know, we just don't know what happened to these people. You know, what made them run a car off at high speed into this floodwater that you could see for a country mile. So, you know, that's you know, part of the strangeness of unusual conditions that concentrate animals together. I saw a cat with my thermal, that the most unusual looking cat I've ever seen. It looked like a panther, except that it had a short tail, and it was tall and had a hump on its shoulder, this rather flat looking head. And so I kept going back, and eventually I saw it in the daylight, and the thing was black. Just like the you know, people that claim they see black panthers, but this had a short tail. It didn't have the long tail of a say a cougar or anything like that, but it was unusually tall. I'd say it was twice as tall as a standard bobcat would be. Looked different. It didn't have the, you know, the tufts of hair on the cheeks and all of that a bobcat has. It had this sleek look, you know, it looked like a cheetah. If you've ever watched the cheetah walk, you know, he's got that bony frame and the sway back and that type of thing. So I haven't seen it since, but you know, those things live in those swamps, and you may never see them unless there is a flood. And likewise with anything like a Sasquatch that might live there, that if the flood is able to get them to come out of those deep, dark recesses and onto those high ground, the levee areas and the areas around where there is some high, you might catch them out where you wouldn't normally catch them out. And so, you know, my thoughts kind of go back to, did they see something odd or unusual that caused them to panic? That I don't know, because, you know, they are deceased. They drowned in the event. So, but here, you know, Holly Bluff has been under siege with water and animals for 3 months now. Alligators, there were over 200 deer on top of an Indian man there in Holly Bluff. If you could imagine that, just that type of conditions alone, if there were a predator there, anything that ate deer, you might catch it trying to get an easy meal there, you know. So, you know, frequent trips back into that area is what I had planned and what I had been doing, except on this one night when I got sick and I turned around, and if I had not gotten sick, I might have been the one to find them, those people, because it was right. I was headed right for that area. Very, very tragic. But it's left a lot of people scratching their heads, and they said on the news that they were looking into the matter, and they would, you know, have more on it whenever they had decided what took place, which is you know, just something of high strange. So, you know, that here in the hot, steamy South, you know, that's what's going on with us. But I got plans to go north later on, later in the second half of the summer, and go to some of my old haunts and stomping grounds up there in the northern part of California and Pacific Northwest, up that area. So I look forward to that. You can there's a lot going on too with some of the Bigfoot, long-standing Bigfoot evidence. And one of them is with the Texas Habituation Site, that there's a site called ghosthuntingtheories.com who are documenting and they're working with the people who took all those videos for 4 years there, and they're consulting with them, and they're producing lots of still photos and videos in chronological order to document that habituation site there. So go to ghostplanetheories.com if you want some very a Bigfoot fix, so to speak.
MK, thank you so much. This has been very interesting. I'm curious to see what you discover.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying. Those you take advantage of situations that are odd and unusual and don't happen very frequently, and sometimes Mother Nature hands you something on a platter.
Indeed. Very much, very much true. Well, and once again, I appreciate your sticking with me on the New American Dream Radio Show, in spite of this situation with Mike. And you know, we're I'm really sorry to see Mike go. You know, he's a very good friend, and I know that his heart's really in the right place in what he's trying to get out into the public eye.
Well, maybe he can find at some point and rejoin us. I hope so.
I hope so too. And in the meantime, I hope he doesn't end up going bankrupt like he thinks he might, because that doesn't seem fair to me.
No. Opinions have always been upheld in the United States, if you have an opinion. Yeah. So, you know, I wonder about that. I don't know the whole situation, but I wonder about, you know, the way things are going nowadays, you know, if we're not drifting a little off course. But perhaps, you know, we'll see a correction of some sort here. Oh.
I'm afraid I think it's a little more than, you know, it's not just a little off course. I think it's pretty far off course. But that's a topic for another time.
Yeah.
I, you know, once again, thank you so much for being on the show, MK. And I look forward to talking to you next month.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Chuck.
All right. Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The New American Dream is a yellow ribbon free zone. We do not support the troops. The troops are not defending our freedom. They are thugs for the empire. Hoorah! We heard all about putting a boot up their ass from Toby Keith. Well, he's a brave man to encourage other men to kill men, women, and children for no reason. Well, the real patriots were the Dixie Chicks. We all know it now. Protesters. That's who protects our freedom, and that's the truth. Think Cynthia McKinney, Cindy Sheehan, not George Bush, John McCain. A hero does not drop bombs on people who are trying to live their lives. Come on, teachers, priests, ministers, coaches, parents. Please start telling the truth. We can handle the truth. In fact, without the truth, we cannot live. We will die slowly, and then all at once we will collapse. That will be that. It will be over, a dusty pile of rubble and ho-hos and lies. Lies. We need a new dream, something real, solid to believe in. Truth in our history books. Bread on the table of the poor. We have a new American dream. not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Coming up in our final half hour, Philip Ferrugio interviews Cynthia Rowley, and we'll do a little bit of the news from Moon Rock Lake. Thank you all for joining me tonight. Remember, Revolution Radio is listener-supported radio, so show them your support. Talk to you on the other side of the station break.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Mycoin, Yourcoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now we're going to present an excerpt from Philip Ferrugio's show, It's the Empire, Stupid. This is an interview that he did just yesterday with Colleen Rowley. And we were We're very lucky to be able to share part of it with you tonight.
It's an Al-Qaeda attack, and there's...
In 2004, patriotic American, many of you have heard that name before.
Sorry about the
she is the retired
there.
FBI agent and former Minneapolis Division legal counsel who became a whistleblower about some of the FBI's pre-9/11 failures. She testified to the Joint Intelligence Committee inquiry and to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and later was named, along with two other whistleblowers, as Time Magazine's 2002 Persons of the Year. Colleen Rowley also publicly warned against launching the U.S. war on Iraq in 2003. She explained that it was not justified and would serve to increase terrorism. Wasn't she right about that? She retired from the FBI in 2004 and continues to write and speak about the costs of U.S. perpetual war waged all over the world and how this uber militarism and fool's errand of seeking full spectrum dominance over the rest of the world has now blown back on Americans. Colleen, thanks for being on. And
yes, thanks for having me.
Let's get to it. All right. Well, let's get right to it. Let's have you tell the people listening your experience pre-9/11 and what went down as far as you saw with your experience in Minneapolis.
Sure. And of course, now this is ancient history for many people. Certainly, most of the millennials and younger generation who are now involved in some of them fighting perpetual war, which began after 9/11. And very few of them even know why. They don't know any of this. None of them have read that old 9/11 Commission report, even though that was. It was faulty and a lot of omissions in it, but even then they didn't even read that part of it. So they don't even understand. So the bottom line is that back in even beginning, I want to say in the late 90s, Al-Qaeda was becoming more and more important and powerful. If you go back to Jimmy Carter's administration and Zbigniew Brzezinski and Charlie Wilson's War. If people have seen that movie, Charlie Wilson's War, the U.S. and its wisdom of again, trying again to always work in strategic ways to control. They decided that it would be good to arm the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. And this is way back in the under Carter, Zbigniew Brzezinski, in order to try to take down the Soviet Union. And so they gave them Stinger missiles, et cetera. Well, one of the people they were arming in Afghanistan, and there was others, was bin Laden. Bin Laden was a Saudi from a very powerful Saudi family. And he had gone to Afghanistan fighting with these Mujahideen against their current at the time imperialism, which was the Soviet Union. There were other terrorists involved in that, which were the Chechen terrorists, the Chechen dissidents from the Soviet Union were part of that. There were people from all over. But this Charlie Wilson's War, when you watch the movie, it seems like this big success. And the CIA gives Charlie Wilson their only award that they've ever given outside of, people that were non-CIA. And because he, quote unquote, is successful in arming these Mujahideen, he gets Congress to approve it. This all begins to blow back in the 90s. Bin Laden gets crossways for a few reasons. One is that when the first Gulf War occurred, he offers to Saudi Arabia to fight against Iraq. He says, I'll save you. And the Saudis, the Saud family, even though he was connected to some of them, said, oh, okay, we don't need you, bin Laden. We'll go with the United States to fight Iraq. And so that made him mad. He was also, he had a fatwa, and he also remarked about the Palestinian issue. And, there were two or three things that he wrote up. So he became an enemy. The only office in the FBI that knew about this development where these former Mujahideen had morphed into Al-Qaeda was the New York office. And as you had terrorist attacks beginning in the 90s, the two embassies in Africa were bombed, and then the coal ship was bombed. And right. So these were three things. And even that very first attack on the World Trade Center had elements of you know, extremist, Wahhabist, Islamic, I don't know what you want to call it, Islamic, right. Perverted, I would call it perverted Islamic extremism that comes out of Saudi Arabia, Wahhabist, right. Stuff. And so even the first attack, and there's something, and by the way, this is actually kind of something that very few people know. There was a really major attack in Saudi Arabia in around 1996 or 97, where it was a dormitory for U.S. military called Khobar Towers. And Khobar Towers was bombed in 1996-97. Like 19 or so servicemen were killed, and a couple hundred, I'm not sure, but it was a few hundred servicemen were wounded. And the FBI, of course, investigates this. Our director at the time, who was Louis Free, actually ends up completely lying about it. It was Al-Qaeda, by all accounts now, even including a former Secretary of Defense. It was an Al-Qaeda attack, and there's lots of evidence that, again, as I was saying, this whole blowback from this arming of the Mujahideen, which, you know, these people in power, when this happens, they won't admit it. They won't admit that there's a mistake and that it's all now, you know, we shouldn't have armed the Mujahideen at the time. That had some serious consequences. Using them as proxies, essentially, this use of foreign groups as proxies, and it had right. Serious consequences. But nobody will ever tell the truth about that, you know, because then they would be, you know, Charlie Wilson and Zbigniew Brzezinski would be complicit with 9/11 if they were to have right. Told the truth. And so, but the Khobar Towers, it looks like the FBI was completely lying about it. And they ended up on Louis Freeh's very last day in office, which was in June of 2001. He made it possible through, by the way, Comey. Comey is the one who okayed it. And they indicted, of all entities, Iranians. You know, if you know anything about the Mideast, you have Sunnis and Shiites, and they are actually, there was a falling out, you know, back in the first century or whatever, or second century, a long, long time ago. And so the Iranians would not have been attacking in Saudi Arabia. That wouldn't have been ridiculous, attacking the Americans. So the whole thing is ridiculous. But you know what? He got the indictment. And to this day now, they pull over on the United States the notion that the Iranians are the terrorists. And it's because of a lot of things, but one of the things that it's because of is because of Khobar Towers and because of this lied indictment. So that happened. And so when you get to 2001, and they in the 9/11 commission, and this is, you know, some parts of the 9/11 commission, like I said, there's a lot of omissions, and some of it was blacked out. You know, the guy who wrote it was a friend of Condi Rice, and so he left out all of the connections to Saudi Arabia. That's probably the worst fallacy of the 9/11 commission, is he leaves out all the connections to Saudi Arabia. Why? Because Bush is connected to, you know, his Condi and Bush, they're all connected to the Saud family, and he doesn't want to have that in there. So he fires the people who found the Saudi connections, and there's 28 pages that were, you know, left out, etc.
Let me just interject. Prince Bandar, right? Prince Bandar was called Bandar Bush. That's how close he was, you know, to the Bush family. Go ahead.
Yes. Their Carlyle group had all kinds of oil connections. And so Bush Sr., this goes way back, that they were friends very close with Bandar Bush. Looks like Bandar Bush is one of the part of the, you know, the Saud family, because these patriarchs in the Saud family have many, many wives. I think even bin Laden had, you know, dozens of wives, et cetera, right. But all of the Saud hierarchy does. And because of that, then they have lots and lots of children. And so it's kind of a complicated family, you know, compared to what we're used to. And, but in any event, they are connected. They all end up kind of vying for power within the families and stuff. And so in the Saud family, there were some of the Saud family that actually were supporting Al-Qaeda. And Bandar Bush looks like he had a role in this himself. He even personally himself had a role. And yet he's sitting on the veranda with Condi Rice and Cheney and Bush. There's a kind of a picture that no one ever sees, right. But it's an absolute accurate picture. And they're all sitting on there probably even toasting. They're probably even toasting to 9/11. And it's, you know, a few days afterwards. That's how bad it is. And so they were just overjoyed in a way that this happens because it gives them their pretext. But you go back to the year before or 2 years before 9/11, when all of this was leading up, and eventually the title is "The System Was Blinking Red." So as this blowback begins to happen, the attacks on the embassies, the attacks on the coal, all of the interceptions that the NSA is picking up, all of the informant that turn into intelligence memos that say that bin Laden is going to attack. And there were two individuals, of course, that were kind of the heads of this. Richard Clark in the White House was the intelligence czar, and George Tenet in the CIA was the head. He was the head of all intelligence. We didn't have an intelligence director, but the head of the CIA was the director of all intelligence. And so they were the people that were getting all this funnel to them. To this day, though, Richard Clark did not get an important, very, very important piece of info and doesn't know why to this day, but he had some good good speculation or good guesses, educated guesses as to why George Tenet did not tell him that two of the terrorist pilots that the CIA had been tracking for a couple of years. And all of this was never told to the FBI. The CIA knew that Al-Qaeda leaders had met in Kuala Lumpur a couple of years before. They knew that a couple of them had had visas to come to the United States. And then eventually the CIA even knew that they had made entry into the United States, and yet they never told the FBI. But even though that one critical thing was not told to the FBI still was getting a lot of intelligence. And the chapter in the 9/11 commission is not only "The System Was Blinking Red," that's one chapter, but it says that the director, Tenet, and Richard Clark's hair was on fire. In other words, this information and intelligence is pouring in so much that they know it's going to happen, and they're scared, of course, and that their hair is on fire. And yet now, fast forward, I left out a few things here in the sequence, but you go to 9/11 itself. Well, I should back up. In July, I'll just back up to a couple more critical things. In July, one of our FBI agents in Phoenix finds out that there are many terrorists, some of them kind of Al-Qaeda-like, linked, you know, Wahhabi extremists, some of them, not all of them, but he finds that some of them are training in flight schools in Phoenix. And he sends a memo in July of 2001, early July, that says that the FBI must urgently, it's so urgent, it's an emergency. We have to check flight schools because the terrorists are training in flight schools. And this memo then just falls on total deaf ears. It isn't, they claim later on, even though their names are on the memo, it's attention to so-and-so, they claim that they never saw it. And they claim that only one very low-level person saw it and tried to pass it on. There's only one office in the FBI who even knows anything about this. And frankly, because only seven agents can even speak Arabic, and who knows what their ability was, but only one or two probably were even totally fluent, one of whom was in New York, Ali Soufan. And he had worked the coal thing, but he never sees, of course, this thing about training in flight schools. And so the problem is, that was one thing. Then in August 15th, two whistleblower pilots. They are pilot. There's flight school in Eagan, Minnesota, which is near the Twin Cities, and there are flight personnel who actually spot their most suspicious student ever. And they disregard the orders from their bosses independently, the two of them. One calls to the St. Paul office, one calls to the Minneapolis office and says, you got to look into this right away. You know, there's this guy that he has no legitimate reason for learning to fly. He's asking weird questions, you know, and his instructor, by the way, his own instructor didn't call. So these were two other people that just knew what was going on because they were talking about it. He was the most, right, you know, suspicious. And so they call and they land on our best agent, you know, for this type of thing, who had been in the Navy, he knew intelligence, and he had flight training himself. I don't think he was a navigator or something, but he knew about planes. And he and an INS agent went out and talked to people, immediately talked to the instructor, his own instructor, and thought, oh my gosh, here we have a terror. And they didn't know about the Phoenix. They didn't know about the Phoenix memo because nothing is being shared. And still they on their own figure out literally within 2 hours. They figure out literally this quickly. In fact, that agent was so astute that in a couple of days, he fashions he works around the clock and he writes up a multi-page report of probable cause for an emergency FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act search. So in an emergency, you don't even have to wait. I mean, it's that quick. And he's asking for an emergency search, and he sends it into headquarters with all of these facts down. And so there's a lot of facts, and you can read them in the 9/11 commission if you want to look at them. But I mean, this guy paid in cash. He said he was learning to fly as an ego trip, and some of the things he was pointing to actually led them back. Ultimately, very quickly, actually do lead back to Kuala Lumpur. They actually lead back to Malaysia. The same guy who had organized the meeting for Al-Qaeda, he had his business cards in there and everything else. So the agents illegally, they took him into custody because they were so afraid he was going to lead a terrorist attack. And his visa had expired. So they could do that very easily. His visa had expired. And so they could take him into custody under INS. Authority. However, right, they did not have the authority to search his personal effects or his laptop. And so they then sought this emergency FISA. And this is where, again, the same people at headquarters who didn't pay any attention to the Phoenix memo say, oh, this is nonsense. There's no emergency. Why would the Minnesota have anything like this happening? And besides, some of us get into trouble if we're not careful doing FISAs. There had been a prior experience where other supervisory personnel at FBI headquarters had been criticized, more than criticized, almost career-ending criticism from the FISA court. You have to understand that before 9/11, it was very, very different than what it is now. There was
Thanks to Colleen Rowley for joining us on the show tonight. That was an interview with Philip Perugio. And you can hear the interview in its entirety at itstheempirestupid.com. Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. The flags are at half staff at the post office and Bueller Chevrolet and the high school and also Taco John's to commemorate and celebrate the death of Osama bin Laden and also the burial at sea of Cruella de Vil, the Wicked Witch of the West, buried at sea, as well as Captain Hook, buried at sea, and the Big Bad Wolf, buried at sea. While back, we heard some stories about Kate King, the daughter of Jack Robert King, the local internet radio show host. Well, Jack Robert is long gone, killed by the police. But Kate's still around, and she sent some transcripts of some of JRK's radio shows and some homemade notes to tell the story of their family. She sent it to the local newspaper, but they didn't want it. So she sent them to us. Good morning, dear people, and good morning, Oakland, California, home of the Black Panther Party. The Panthers are a group that this Midwest boy does not know much about. No, not supposed to. I've heard that they, the Chicago police and FBI, well, they killed Fred Hampton and Mark Clark in a morning raid in Chicago. The Panthers were an actual threat to power. That meant they could not exist. Is there anything or anybody out there these days that's an actual threat to these criminals today? I heard Dick Gregory speaking one day in Omaha. He said he did not believe we landed on the moon. And then he said, they will roll tanks on your ass. Well, that was an epiphany for me. I did not believe it at first. If you become effective, if you really challenge them, there will be tanks in your zinnias by morning. I believe we're about to see just how right Mr. Gregory was. Is this heaven? No. It's Ohio. This is Bigfoot Radio, streaming to you on the internet at www.lookingforbigfoot.net. Yeah, right. Well, hello. My name is Jack Robert King. They killed Paul Wellstone. I can feel it all around me, like 98% humidity. Like the feeling there's someone in the house who shouldn't be there. They attacked the World Trade Center to put out the Patriot Act, to steal the oil, to rule the world, to impress their long-lost junior high sweetheart. I don't know why. Suddenly realize it, reach behind me into the back seat to snatch that bad guy I know is there, but all I grab is air. I can still hear it breathing. Catch a shadow in the rear view. They killed the Kennedys and Martin. Now we got the books and testimony, but before that, all I had to do was walk down to the Super Value for Mom to buy bread, stand on a milk crate to look into the eyes of the checkout lady as she counted my change. I might have guessed that Vietnam was alive by the glare in Father Tom's eye, the way Sister Margaret rushed by like she was always on her way somewhere to cry. Someone once said that violence is as American as apple pie. And, well, now I know why. I'm just some small kid from a small town thinking nothing ever happens here. But actually, I was right in the middle of the action. The Baker bombed Iraq. The barber gunned down Bobby and the four little grandmothers in blue flower dresses and green metal chairs in that row of white porches on Sarah Street. They sliced the throats of the children in El Salvador in their spare time during the summer in the 1980s. You can see it in their eyes, dull and dead, not from seeing too much of the world, but too little. The robins are tweeting on the front lawn, pumping their red chest into the sun. But you know what their song is? Hang the niggers. What? On the days we bombed Iraq, the farmers' co-op elevator dryers hummed a happy tune. The coffee drinkers smiled across Formica tables. Ask for more cream, please. For the 10 years in between, when children died from the sanctions from no food or light or heat or love or prayers or Hardee's, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Smith went to work each day, drove on the right side of the road, smiled, kept their desks in order, and were not considered suspects. They really truly stole a presidential election in the United States, and our response was to wave at the limousines as they passed by on the TV atop the kitchen counter next to the toaster. They shot down or lasered down Wellstone's plane. They really did attack their own Pentagon. I see this. I have zero documentation, but I don't care. I have all the proof I need from that glazed look in your eye as you struggle to attach the American flag to your car antenna. I understand America by watching you. I know it from growing up in the Midwest of America, from playing baseball and football, riding down the middle of the street with no hand, eating an ice cream cone. Strawberry drip on my white t-shirt, I don't care. Mama wash it, clean it up.
Listen to Revolution Radio, Freedom Source.
The blood of a thousand Chileans from her hand. We news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs. All the Democrats and journalists are cowards. And on the Homeland Security COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average. Thank you for joining us tonight on the new American Dream Radio
Welcome
Show.
Welcome to Revolution Radio, where you, the listeners, are
weekend,
in
every week.
Here at Revolution
right here
Radio,
on
we present
Revolution Radio at 3 hours
of news and information each and every day. Revolution Radio never sleeps. Revolution Radio is worldwide and borderless information. Revolution Radio is also commercial free. Revolution Radio is supported 100% by you, the listeners. And that's why we appeal to you to donate and support this station and its expenses. You can support us in many available options like archive subscriptions, our seed pack selections, or even my woodworking store. And we also even have Revolution Radio's swag at the Revolution Radio Zazzle store, in which you can get t-shirts, coffee cups, even a baby onesie. Or you can just plain donate to the cause. We cannot continue without your support, and your support is what helps pay the bills. So please, if you wish us to continue, please stop by our station support page and drop a dime on us. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? In survival, in gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents, imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank or all the banks.